The only premise to the shiur today is that I view my role in these shiurim as a little different. I'm not sure what everybody was expecting, but I'm going to leave it to the shul rabbis to handle the, you know, this is how much you have to clean, this is how little you have to clean, this is what products you need to have kosher l'Pesach, which ones you don't. Again, if anyone has any questions, you can ask me privately, that's fine. But what I'm going to focus this week and next week on is really more of the halachot specific to, I guess you could say, more generally background in terms of the different averot, different categories of issues that we need to be concerned with on Pesach. And I say that both, some of them will remain from before Pesach, some after Pesach, some on Pesach, and we'll talk about today that this chart really gives you a quick overview of the different, both positive mitzvos and the negative lo sase commandments that exist on Pesach, so we'll talk through those for a little bit, and then we will focus a little bit on some more of a conversation of chametz, which I think does have some real practical ramifications, but again, is a little less of the, not the nitty gritty, so to speak, of some of those other questions that we might have to handle for Pesach. And then we'll hopefully move into, I just don't know if we'll reach there today or not, into the actual halachot of the Seder, and we'll talk through that next week as well. So the handout I gave you, the second one, which feel free to take home, is a really good, concise, all English review of the different sections of the Seder, so I'm not going to actually go through that exactly. It's pretty easy to follow, but we will talk about the highlights and important halachot, and perhaps talk about some lesser known issues that we should be more cognizant of. So if we take a look, we'll start on the top. There's, I guess, four quadrants to this chart. On the top right, we have the mitzvah aseh min haTorah. On the left side, the lo sase min haTorah, and then on the bottom right, the mitzvos midrabanan, and on the bottom left, the isuri derabanan. Right, so anytime we're learning halacha, it's important to know where it is that the issue we're talking about, where it comes from. So let's first focus on the top right. So there are three positive mitzvot min haTorah that we have to be focused on. The truth of the matter is, though, normally, when you learn this topic, at least when it comes to Seder night, you're focused on two, and that's because the first one, which we're going to talk about a bit at length today, is something that is actually a mitzvah that we have to do before Pesach. So the first one on there, lahashbit seor miyom arba asar, right there, that there is a mitzvah that we refer to as tashbisu, to get rid of the chametz, which is where all the laws of, let's just keep it simple, Biur chametz, the burning of the chametz, come to. Again, if you jump down for a minute, number one, bedikas chametz is actually a rabbinic mitzvah, which we'll talk about why it is that we have to check for the chametz, and we'll get to that momentarily. Okay, so the first biblical one is to somehow dispose of all of your chametz before Pesach. Okay, that has to be accomplished in one way or another, and we'll talk about that. The number two and three are the only two biblical mitzvot that we have at the Seder. There are a lot of mitzvot. There are even more minhagim that we have at the Seder. But the second one is, as we know, to eat matzah. There's a biblical commandment based on the pasuk be'erev tochlu matzah, to eat matzah. And the third one on the bottom there is l'saper b'yitziyah mitzrayim b'leil ha-pesach. Right? The notion that we have called sipur yitziyah mitzrayim, that we spend much of the evening dealing with in terms of talking about the story of Yetziyah Mitzrayim, and there's lots of details that we'll hopefully get to in terms of how to actually fulfill that. It's not just to tell a story. There's certain requirements which we'll get to in that second handout most likely next week. Okay, so we're going to stick with the right side for the first couple of minutes. So we have Tashbisu, get rid of your chametz somehow, eating matzah, and the Sapor Yetzias Mitzrayim, what we call Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right, so for that, come back for Shira 4, 3, and 4, where we'll talk about Haggadah and how to do that at more length. We'll talk about the halachic part of it next week. Now, mitzvah midrabbanan on the bottom. So we mentioned already bedikas chametz, and we'll get to it in a minute why there is such an obligation. And then number 2, 3, and 4 we'll put together because they're all at the Seder. We know that they have the mitzvah to have arba kosot, to eat maror, and to say halal. Those are what we will call the formal mitzvot at the Seder. Again, everything here on both charts, except for the top one, number one, is happening Seder night. Number one, we pointed out, and we'll talk about soon, is happening before Pesach, specifically on the 14th at a very specific time. We have a mitzvah to get rid of whatever other chametz is in our possession. And that's why I want to review a little bit of that timeline. And as we know, many of us sell our chametz, and there's a very specific timing that has to go to work out. Right? If you, for example, try to, you know, fulfill the mitzvah of burning your chametz before the rabbi sold your chametz, then you haven't really accomplished so much because you still own all the chametz that's sitting in your, you know, whatever, where your closet or wherever you're keeping it. So there's a very specific timeline that has to be kept to on, let's just say, Erev Yontif, perhaps on the end side also in terms of buying back chametz. We'll come to some interesting questions too momentarily. The only thing I want to point out specifically here, because it's one that might be bothering some of you, in terms of, because it's the one that bothers most people when they look at this list, well, I'll throw it to you. Anything, anyone, does anything on the bottom list bother anybody? Right, there's one mitzvah there that oftentimes people think belongs on the top, meaning that there's a rabbinic mitzvah of achilas maror, which oftentimes people think is actually a biblical mitzvah. Truth of the matter is that it's not. And the Gemara in Pesachim deals with this at length. Now, you're all looking at me strange, but it says it in the Torah, right? It says, al matzo du morim yochluhu. It says in the Torah to eat maror. So how am I sitting here telling you that it's not a mitzvah from the Torah to eat maror? So the Gemara says very simply, what does the Pasuk say? Al matzo du morim yochluhu. On matzah and maror, you shall eat it. What is the it? The Torah says is referring to the Karban Pesach. So Bizman HaBeis HaMikdash, when we brought a Karban Pesach, right? So then there was a mitzvah to eat matzah and maror with the Karban Pesach, perhaps a fancier korech than we eat, right? Because it would have had the real Karban Pesach there. But this was the sandwich, right? The real sandwich was Karban Pesach meat, matzah and maror eaten together. That is a biblical mitzvah. That's what the Torah tells us to eat. But there is no mention otherwise of the mitzvah of maror in the Torah. So then you'll come back and say, Rabbi, okay, that makes sense, but then what's matzah doing on the top? Al matzah u'morim yochluhu. So shouldn't matzah also be rabbinic? So the Gemara says, not so fast. There is actually a second pasuk, which is the one you have there by number 2, by Erev Tochlu Matzah. So in actuality, matzah, the commandment to eat matzah, is given in the Torah twice. One in conjunction with the Karban Pesach. So Mirtzah Hashem will all be around to be able to live with the Beit HaMikdash and to have the Karban Pesach. We will actually eat Karban Pesach with matzah and maror. That's what the Torah had in mind. Okay? But the Torah also had in mind that you should eat matzah separately. Right? And I believe, again, I wasn't there, but I believe if we had been around during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, somewhat similar to what we do, again, I don't want to get complicated, they probably ate matzah twice, right? We eat it 3 times, we're lucky. They only had to eat it twice, presumably, because they had matzah umorom yochluhu, they had the real Karban Pesach, that was like the main event of the night, and they had matzah separately too, right? We only have matzah min haTorah, because when we eat it separately, we have matzah min haTorah. Maror is only what we call a rabbinic, you know, enactment. That we don't want, the Chazal didn't want us to forget about the mitzvah of maror. So they told us to eat maror, right? But again, if people from the Zman HaBeis HaMikdash would come down and look at us, they'd look at us like strange. Like, why are you eating this, you know, whatever type of maror you eat? Why are you eating it by itself? They never did that. Right? But be that as it may, rabbinically, Chazal didn't want us to lose the mitzvah of maror, so therefore they said we should eat it. But we have to recognize that our fulfillment of the mitzvah is different, that the mitzvah of maror is rabbinic, the mitzvah of matzah is biblical. I'm not going to get involved here, but in terms of the background, but big debate, big debate in the Rishonim. So When I'm at the Seder, when do I actually fulfill the mitzvah min haTorah of Maror? I'm sorry, of matzah. Is it by motzi matzah, right in the beginning of the Seder, or is it by afikom and at the end? Now that's a big debate. We could have a whole shiur just on that topic by itself. The only reason I'm mentioning it, and again, when you get to read the details in the other packet, you'll see I touch on this, is that this does have an impact in terms of how much matzah does one have to eat. Now again, I don't want to get sidetracked into figuring out what a kazayas is and how much, but the bottom line is everyone agrees that by motzi matzah and afikomen, you need to eat a larger amount of matzah than by korech. Okay, and the reason for that is based on this idea that motzi matzah or afikomen, one of them, depends who you follow, is the biblical mitzvah. So we have to take, so to speak, a larger shiur, a larger amount. Whereas korech is a complete rabbinic mitzvah, which now we understand a little bit better, although it's again a whole topic. It's basically just to help us, like Hillel, as a zecher, right? That's what Hillel said, zecher lemikdash, right? That he wanted to remember this matzah umorim yochluhu. Right? The main event of the night at the time of the Beis HaMikdash was actually their version of korech. It just happened to have meat in it too. Right? It had the carbon pesach. So therefore, korech is a complete, for sure, rabbinic enactment. And therefore, again, for those people who don't like to have, you know, whatever it is, a half a matzah, three quarters of a matzah, depending what kind of matzah you have, right? So you can have a little bit less when it comes to, well, not a little bit actually, it's quite a significant amount less of matzah when it comes to korech. Again, we'll leave that, we'll touch upon that hopefully next week when we go through the Seder specifically. So that more or less covers the right side. Again, we're going to come back to the Tashbitu and the Bedikas Chametz in a few minutes, because I want to focus on that for quite a few minutes. Let's jump to the left side at the moment. Let's focus now on the low sases, all the negative prohibitions. So most of them we kind of jumble all together, but it is important to realize that there are five separate prohibitions from the Torah. First one, Shelo lechol chametz b'yom arba asa achar chatzot. Right? So it's actually asur min haTorah, maybe no kares, but it's an isur min haTorah to eat chametz on Erev Pesach after chatzot. Okay? Now again, big discussion in Gemara Pesachim. Chazal didn't want us to even get close to that, so as you all know, our time to stop eating chametz is actually 2 hours earlier than chatzot. It's at the fourth hour, because Chazal didn't want us to at all get close. We'll see what else we do. But there is a Torah prohibition of eating chametz after midday. Again, midday this time of year with the clocks change is pretty late. It's, I don't know exactly, probably around 1 something, which is, for those of you who like to have an early Seder, not going to be helpful because you have a lot longer time to eat the chametz this year, afikomen this year, but we'll get to that another time if anyone wants. We'll get a good Dvar Torah by the Haggadah to help those who want to push along the Seder. Truth is, it's the same Dvar Torah can help you make the Seder a little bit longer too, so we'll have to see how you want to play that one. Well, let's wait for that. So issue number 2, Shelo lechol chametz kol shivas yamim shel Pesach. That's the obvious one, right? Lo yochel chametz, that for the 7 days of Pesach, you're not allowed to eat chametz, right? We know we have 8 days, but again, the 8th day is not Torah law anymore, because Pesach min haTorah is over. So again, not that we should do it, but if we ate chametz on the 8th day of Pesach in Chutz La'aretz, that would be a rabbinic prohibition. Number 3, Shelo lechol taroves chametz kol shiva. So that's, again, the Torah, and again, the Gemara spends a long time talking about these. Not only is there an isser to eat chametz by itself, but there's an isser to eat chametz as a taruvas, as a mixture, right? And, you know, we just kind of lump those two together, but the Torah does separate them out as two separate prohibitions. Again, we just stay away from chametz and make sure there's no chametz in anything. But technically, you would violate different prohibitions if you were eating, you know, chametz that was only, you know, some product that was only chametz as opposed to a mixture of non-chametz and chametz. Okay. And number 4 and 5 are often referred to in the vernacular, so to speak, as bal yira'e and bal yimatzeh. Now, where does that come from? So bal, beis lamed, we know in Hebrew, and in Aramaic, oftentimes Aleph, Beis are reversed, are interchangeable. So the Torah here says, Shelo yira chametz kol shiva, that you should not see any chametz the 7 days of Pesach. So Al, from the language of don't, which is a low-sase language in the Torah, oftentimes just gets for conversation. And again, that's just the Gemara did that, and that's why people do it. Instead of Al Yira, we say Baal, because Aleph Beis is often interchangeable. It's the exact same thing. It's just terminology. But there is a prohibition not to see any chametz, right? Shelo yimatze chametz kol shiva, right? Number five is different. Even if you don't see it, right? But it's found. Shelo yimatze, you should not find, so to speak, any chametz in your possession, let's say. That is a separate prohibition, so they're not the same, right? You could have, you know, situations where you violate Bal Yirah and you don't violate Bal Yimatze, and vice versa. So we often put the two together, but it is two separate prohibitions. One, not to have any of your own chametz in your possession, and then there's the issue of Bal Yirah, not to see chametz in your possession. And again, what those two differences are, we'll have to see if we have time to touch on. So we put here, because that will link back in a minute, let's go to the bottom, and then we'll go back to the little thing on the bottom of the top category. The Isuri Derabanan. So one of them I mentioned already. Achilas Chametz Biyom Arbasa B'Shas Raviyu V'Chamishi. Right, so I mentioned in number one on the top left that the Torah prohibition is not to eat Chametz from Chatzot and onward on Erev Pesach. But Midrabanan, Chazal added even as early as the fourth and the fifth hour, and that's why we go by after the beginning of that fourth hour is when we no longer eat chametz on Erev Pesach, because again, there's a rabbinic prohibition lest we come to violate the Torah prohibition. And another interesting one, which we'll talk about today a little bit, is chametz she'over alav ha-Pesach, right? Which means you didn't realize that you had chametz until after Pesach. Right, so it's chametz she'over alav ha-Pesach, means chametz that passed through Pesach, meaning it would in prohibition existed, right? So now there is a rabbinic prohibition to eat that chametz, and it's debatable in the Gemara as well. Perhaps not even allowed to get benefit from that chametz, right? So, and again, knowing whether you can get benefit from something is very important. It's the difference between, you know, taking chametz and having to burn it and get rid of it versus, you know, maybe giving it to a nanny or some non-Jewish person to at least make use of it, right? So if it's usur bahana, if it's forbidden to get benefit, then you can't do anything. You literally have to burn it, throw it out, and so on. So those are, in a nutshell, the overview of the Torah and rabbinic formal mitzvot of Pesach, right? So again, we have 3 minute Torah on the aseh side, 5 minute Torah on the Losase side, and then a whole bunch of different rabbinic ones. Let's focus in for a few minutes, because it's really the beginning. A, it's the beginning of Pesach, and B, I find often, at least in theory, it's the part that we don't talk about as much. Yes, we are good at talking about, like I said initially, you know, how much to clean, how to clean, and all that kind of stuff. But more in background in the halacha of what you're really trying to accomplish in terms of destroying the chametz. So we saw on the top that, and we're going to use both sides now. On the one hand, we have the mitzvah of tashbisu, to get rid of the chametz, which we're going to talk now, how do you fulfill that? Which is going to be connected in a minute to the rabbinic mitzvah of checking for chametz. Right? If you don't check, you can't really be sure you're going to destroy, right? And then on the left side, we have something that's connected, but we should not confuse the two, which is this prohibition of not having chametz in your possession, right, of Bal Yirah or Bal Yimatze, which now if you look at the bottom left of the top left box, what do we do to avoid the isser of Bal Yirah or Bal Yimatze? We do two things, and the truth is I probably should have put them in the opposite order. We do what we call bittul chametz, which is what we're going to talk for the next couple of minutes about, which essentially is a statement of nullification, of saying that this chametz is not mine. Any chametz that, right, that I, presumably chametz that I don't know about anymore, and we're going to see why that is. And then we also will sell our chametz, but those are for two different reasons, right? So let's talk about that now. So again, we're going to kind of link the connections between number one on the aseh side and the los aseh vayira and how we go about avoiding that. And that's going to take us a few minutes. So let's start first with the mitzvah of tashbisu. So how do you fulfill the mitzvah? Right, the pasuk says, "Ach bayom harishon tashbisu saor mibatecha." That it sounds, by the way, "Ach bayom harishon." It sounds like you should actually destroy the chametz on the first day of Pesach. We're going to come back to that in a minute. Why we know that the Torah, when it says "bayom harishon," is actually referring to erev Pesach. Okay. First of all, the obvious reason I would have thought was because then you've already violated Bal Yumatzeh, right? If you had chametz, right? Saving up all my chametz to burn, but then I'm violating a different prohibition, so that wouldn't make sense. We're going to see the Gemara gives a different reason, too, why it must be that Bayom HaRishon means on Erev Yontif. But just, first of all, so what would you say? If I asked you, how do you deal with, or how do you fulfill the mitzvah of getting rid of your chametz? So what would be the answer? Or answers. Okay, burning it is definitely one good option. So selling it I'm going to keep aside for the moment. It's not a wrong answer, because you're not really fulfilling the mitzvah of getting rid of your chametz by selling your chametz. You're really selling your chametz just so that you can, you know, in a halachically acceptable way, get your chametz back after Pesach, right? But right, so it's not quite the same. So the one other thing which I mentioned before is this notion called bittul chametz, right? So the Gemara actually says that midoraisa bittul sagi, right? It's enough to avoid bal yirah, bal yamatzeh for sure, right? Let's focus on that for 1 minute, the easy part of it. You have a whole kitchen full of beautiful baked chametz, right? Min ha-Torah, if on Erev Pesach you say, and you mean it, all of that chametz is completely not mine, I'm relinquishing control of it, and you mean it, anyone could walk on right in and take it, right? Min ha-Torah, if Pesach starts, you're not in violation of Bal Yirah, Bal Yamatzeh, right? So why then do we bother with the whole bedikas chametz notion, right? Just say it's not there. Why do I even sell my chametz, right? Why do we bother? So the answer is that Chazal put those things into place, right, specifically with the selling of the chametz, because we don't rely on this bittul by itself. Min haTorah, yes. But midrabanan, as you could all imagine, you have a whole kitchen full, right? Are we really relinquishing our ownership of it? If someone walks in, are we really going to let them walk out with anything that they want? Right? Forget about your own house. Imagine, you know, it's your parnasa. You own a bakery. Right? Let's make the stakes a little higher. Right? So Chazal understood that we had to be a little more careful. So that's really where the notion of selling chametz comes in, because then it's really gone, so to speak. It's really out of our possession. It's physically in our possession, but it's technically owned by another individual. And that's different. But that's why, so midrabanan, we don't rely on bittul alone, but we do bittul. But our bittul is different. If you pay attention, after the bedikas chametz and then after the biur chametz, and again in the morning, we say a little kol chamira, three-line statement. But we're not saying that we're annulling the chametz that's in our pantry that we're selling, because doesn't need to be mevatel, and I don't want to be mevatel it, because then anybody could walk in and take it, right? I'm selling my chametz to a very specific non-Jew, because I have this feeling he's going to give it back to me, right? So the bittul that we do is basically on the chametz that we don't know about, right? So if there's chametz that I forgot, that I didn't sell, or I didn't throw out, I didn't get rid of, whatever it is that we might do. So that's where we do bittul chametz for, and that is fine because, again, it's much less likely that you'll actually find something, right? But the point is, that's what our bitul chametz really accomplishes, is really on the chametz that we don't know about. Okay, so back to the beginning again, bitul chametz technically should be enough not to violate bal yirah or bal yimatzeh. Chazal say, we got to be more careful than that, so therefore we need to sell the chametz. That's, so to speak, how we deal with the negative side. But let's go back to the tashbisu side for a minute. Is it good enough to fulfill this positive commandment? Again, it's important to remember, the same way we think about Shabbos, there are certain things that are positive that I should do. There's other things that I can't do. Los ases, right? So, unfortunately, sometimes we're more focused on the los ases, and that's typically because they come along with like a harsher punishment than an ase does. But an ase will come and go. So we want to make sure we take the time to be able to fulfill the mitzvah. So how do we all, and this is an individual mitzvah, we all have to somehow fulfill this mitzvah of tashbisu. So again, option number one might be it's good enough just to do bitul chametz too. Right? Bitul chametz might be enough when I nullify it. That's enough that it's considered not in my possession anymore, right? That I've destroyed it, right? So to speak. The word tashbisu literally means to destroy. Sure.
So for example, I'm going away for Pesach, right? And I'm selling my whole house.
So
I'm leaving. Right? And I'm going away. But you're saying that you have...
So let's come back to that afterwards, okay? We're going to talk about those exact questions, and we're going to come up with some interesting ones. Actually, I came across an interesting question, which I don't know if people really do anymore, but if anyone's going to Israel, it's an interesting one. But anyway, we'll come back to that in a few minutes. So, again, option number one to fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu, really simple. In your heart, in your mind, just mentally say that any chametz that I don't have anymore, again, and I've sold my other chametz, right? But basically anything else is no longer mine, right? And therefore, I'm yotze the mitzvah tashbisu, I don't have to do what we call bir chametz. I don't have to do bir chametz according to this opinion. It's just not necessary. What we call bir chametz is because opinion number two says no. Tashbisu means to destroy. And you actually have to go ahead and destroy it. Right? How do you destroy it? So that itself is a debate in the Gemara. Right? One opinion says that you actually have to burn it. It has to dafka bi be'esh. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And the Chachamim come along and say no. You can do anything. You could throw it into the water, right? He says you can crumple it up and like just like throw it out into, you know, into the air so it disperses, you know, out of your prison. Obviously not in your house, but outside, right? So he says you could do other things too. It does not have to specifically be with fire. And they have their proofs, which I'm not going to go into exactly for why. But the one thing I do want to go back to, because I alluded to it before, this opinion that you have to do something, whether it's burning or something else, where does that come from? So the Gemara explains, remember the pasuk I quoted to you before, Ach b'yom harishon tashbisu se'orim b'bateichem. The very next pasuk is b'yom harishon mikra kodesh, on the first, and then it says on the seventh day is also mikra kodesh, lo tasa, sorry, ko molacha lo yasa b'hem. You cannot do malacha on the first and last day of Pesach. So since creating a fire, let's forget about the yontif parts, but in general, creating a fire is considered a malacha, the Torah can't be telling us to burn the chametz on the first day of Pesach. That would be a forbidden malacha, right? So therefore, that's how we learn, again, that it means, b'yom harishon means on Erev Yom Tov. So again, it's clear that, and there's, by the way, there's plenty of other examples of this. I don't know, plenty, but there are other examples where when it says Bayom HaRishon, it does refer to Erev. There are other scenarios like that too. So the bottom line is that this mitzvah Tashbisu applies to Erev Yom Tov. And the part that I want to talk about a little bit is, so what's this debate about? Either you have to burn it, or maybe you don't even have to burn it, but you can get rid of it in some other way. So, the famous Rav Soloveitchik's grandfather, Rav Chaim from Brisk, had a very famous thought where he tied in the following. And he says, this mitzvah to burn the chametz. Does this mean, and this is kind of like the language that he uses, that there is a chovas hachefza, there's an obligation on the chefetz, on the object? Or is this what he calls a chovas hagavra, an obligation on the gavra, on the person? Meaning, does it mean that this chametz must be destroyed? Or does it mean that an individual has to be rid of his or her chametz? And he says that will indicate whether or not you will say, well, if it's that you have to destroy the chametz, perhaps that we say that the burning has to be done, right? That's because there's an obligation to get rid of this chefetz. This object must be obliterated, right? And it goes from the language of Eish to burn it, so we burn it. Whereas the Chachamim who said you could throw it into the water, you could do other things, there's not, right? I don't care if that piece of chametz is sitting there in the bottom of the ocean, right? Whether it's edible or non-edible, it doesn't matter, right? It was my obligation to get rid of it, so I've gotten rid of it. It's not in my possession anymore. Nobody sees it. Nobody knows about it. I certainly don't. So according to that, his logic was because it was just your obligation to get rid of the chametz, but not necessarily that the chametz has to be what we normally thought of as destroyed, obliterated, and so on. And that could perhaps be the debate. Let's take this one step further.
That's what he held?
That's what the Chachamim and the Gemara held. Okay? It's a good question. But if you did it before, if you're doing it, you're doing this presumably before the Zman where you can't, where there's no Isser to get Hana earlier in the day, so that would only be, that would be a problem for sure if you did that on Pesach, yeah. But before Pesach, there's no, let's say before the fifth hour, there's no Isser to get benefit. Okay, one more second on this type of thinking, because then I think you'll see, even though it sounds at this point as just like, you know, maybe thinking, is it an Isser, what I'm calling on the chefetz, on the object, or on the gavra, on the person, we're going to see in a minute that that's not just terminology. What about chametz in general? How do we view this prohibition that we all have of eating chametz? Do we look at it, and there's two options again, that the chametz itself, what I call before the cheftza, there's nothing wrong inherently with chametz in and of itself, because the proof is we can eat it the whole year, right? Just these 7 days, we can't. So one might argue that the obligation to avoid chametz is just what I call before a chovas gavra. It's an individual's responsibility to avoid eating chametz. Okay? Or do we say no? During these 7 days, chametz is aser to be eaten, and therefore there is an actual iser on this object, this what we call the cheftza, on this object, and that's what's aser. Now, again, sounds like terminology, but now I'm going to give you some really interesting cases. So the first one would be what I alluded to very quickly earlier. If we have a situation of chametz she'over alav ha-pesach, right? Chametz that somehow you missed, and it was really in your possession on Pesach, and now it's after Pesach you find it, right? So what's the halacha? Right? You're not, well, yes, you're for sure not allowed to eat it, right? That's why, again, I don't know what it's like here, but I know like the big conversation in the States is, okay, so which supermarkets are we allowed to go to based on if the owner was a Jew or not Jew? Did they sell their chametz? Did they not sell their chametz? But that's exactly this question, right? If you have a non-Jew, if you have a Jew who owned chametz on Pesach, none of us are allowed to eat that chametz. It's a real iser to eat chametz shavuot Pesach, right? Is there an iser bahana too? Is it prohibited to get benefit from it too? Like right, you mentioned that you got to burn it, right? So that perhaps again is dependent on this first question. If we view that chametz is an iser on the gavra, right? So then it's just your problem on Pesach. After Pesach, not. So perhaps it wouldn't be as prohibited after Pesach. Whereas if it's an iser on the chefetz, on the cheftza, Then perhaps, just give me 2 seconds, 2 minutes. Then perhaps we could argue that that chametz is just as usher after Pesach as it was on Pesach, and you got to burn it. You can't get hana. You for sure can't eat it. That everybody agrees to. The only question is it also prohibited in hana? And that's a little bit debatable. And again, what I'm pointing out is it might be that this is the nekuda that they're arguing about. Do we view the chametz as this iser chefta on the object, or is it this iser gavra on the person? And that would be one ramification. Now, this is the more interesting one, which I was mentioning before. There's two scenarios, the flip cases, but they're different. You'll see why for one very important reason. Let's stick with the easier one. You are, let's say, someone who lives in Israel, and you're in Chutz La'aretz for Pesach. Okay? I don't know why anybody would do that, but you did. So you're in Chutz La'aretz for Pesach, and you want to figure out when do you have to sell your chametz that's in Israel, right? So do you have to be, right, Israel's 6 hours ahead. I guess by Pesach they'll be 7 hours ahead, right? So did they switch already? Oh, they switched this week? Do you have to make sure that your chametz in Israel is sold by the time that sixth hour in Israel sets in? Or can you sell your chametz based on the time that you are in, the time zone you're in? That will depend on this question. If the whole issue is you, right, it's an isser for you to eat chametz, what we call the isser on the gavra, then who cares what time it is in Israel, right? It goes by me. It's mine. I own it, right? By the way, this assumes that I'm selling the chametz in New York, which I can do. I can sell my Israeli chametz in New York. I can do that, right? It'd be a little bit harder for the guy to get there, but it still could work. I don't know. I don't think you have to supply the plane ticket for him to get to your chametz, but right. So that it would be if it's on the Isser Gavra, then it sounds like it would be okay to go by the time that you're in. If you say it sounds like we're holding just lachumro because on Pesach, unfortunately, we're machmer about everything more or less. That it's an isser of the chefza on the object, so then how could your object of chametz be in existence in your possession in Israel when the zman of Israel time, when the isser of chametz sets in? So based on that, you'd have to make sure that you sell your chametz, even if you're selling it to a rabbi in Toronto, right? You'd have to make sure you sell it to him before the time of isser of chametz sets in Israel. Now that's one way, but when you flip it around, it gets a lot more interesting. Let's say you are an American in Israel. Yeah, you are from, you're not from Israel, and you're in Israel. Anywhere from outside of Israel, this will work. And you're selling your chametz while you're in Israel. You're selling your Toronto chametz to the rabbi in Israel. Now it gets one more step complicated. Why? Because, again, same question. A, when can you start to own your chametz? Does it go based on the time zone you're in versus the time zone that you are that your chametz is in? The only complication here is what happens now? You're in Israel, and I just think I'm confusing this one. Hold on a second. Because there's only one day of Yontif at the end. So Yontif ends. The rabbi in Israel buys back the chametz. Right, so if he buys back your Toronto chametz, you're in trouble, right? If you sold your chametz to the rabbi in Israel, but he's selling your Toronto chametz, right? He's buying it back for you at a time when you as a, you know, not an Israeli, assuming you're keeping, right, keep 2 days of Yontif, right? So he's buying it back for you when it's still Zman Isser for you, right? So that is also potentially problematic. I think, interestingly, what I saw is that in those scenarios, you just work out with the Rav, that the Rav actually, he does the Mechira with the non-Jew when he does, but the Rav, so to speak, maintains ownership of, you'd have to work this all out, obviously, it just doesn't happen, but he could maintain ownership of your chametz for your eighth day of Pesach, and then the agreement would say. But this actually has to be like written down. This is not like a joke. Like you have to work it out. And I want to come back to some quick scenarios of if you go away. So the bottom line is there's more details to these cases, but I mention them because of the... oftentimes we just say, like, what do I have to do, what do I have to do? But I think it's important to focus in a little bit on, like, the why and where it comes from. And I think, again, this question that we asked of whether or not chametz is viewed as an isser on the chayfetz, on the object, or as opposed to as an isser on the gavra, on the person, really is very relevant to these questions. Again, practically speaking, like I mentioned, we are going to be strict in all of these cases to make sure that that chametz would not be considered in our possession. So again, if you're an Israeli in Toronto for Pesach, you'll make sure your chametz that's in Israel is sold by Israeli time, not by Toronto time, and vice versa. The case I just mentioned, you'll make sure that you don't own your chametz for the eighth day of Pesach. You'll have him take care of it. Now, the only other thing I wanted to mention with this, and then we'll take some of the going away questions, is... so, practically speaking, we fulfill the mitzvah of Tashbisu by burning our chametz, right? We actually burn it. Like, the minhag Yisrael is that we actually, you know, go by Rabbi Yehuda, that you do have to burn it, and you don't just flush it down the toilet or throw it into the river or something like that. Again, if you found something like, you know, on Yom Tov, what do you do? So that's a separate question. You keep it on the side until, and then you burn it. But let's assume that you're burnt. Now, just let's try to go through the time frame now. So we have a mitzvah now to burn the chametz. So midrabanan, Chazal instituted, right, what we were talking about before, the non-spring cleaning, right? Meaning that the idea is that we need to make sure our house is rid of chametz, A, so we don't violate Bal Yerah Bal Yematzeh, right? And then we kind of leave over, when we're checking chametz, a little bit of chametz so that we can burn it to fulfill this mitzvah of Tashbisu, right? So we don't want to get rid of every last drop because then we won't have that perfect opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of Tashbisu, of actually obliterating the chametz, which is usually, for most of us, just this little amount that we've left over, right? So again, that being interplayed on the one side of fulfilling Tashbisu, then Chazal, to make sure that we were clean in our house so we don't violate Vayireh B'Yimatzeh, gave us a positive commandment to check, to do Bedikas Chametz, on the night of Erev Yantif, right, the night of Yudalid. But again, selling the Chametz just falls in if because people had more food, they had stuff that they didn't want to have to lose or get rid of or burn and get rid of, and therefore we had to come up with a way of doing that, or for some people to do that without violating, again, Bal Yerah Bal Yematzeh. Now, in terms of the questions of going away, we'll just do this before we end. So, it all has to be in like a real contract. If you go to the rabbi to sell your chametz, so oftentimes, he'll, or some rabbis, depending how they do this, will have different contracts that you can actually sign to sell the chametz. The standard one that most people sign is where the rabbi is selling the chametz, and he's agreeing to do is to sell the chametz on Erev Pesach, where again, he's only going to sell it right at that zman after, you know, right before the sixth hour. He can't do it after the sixth hour because then we have chametz that's in our possession, which we're not allowed to have anymore at that point. And therefore, like right around that sixth hour, he will sell the chametz. It's usually, actually, I apologize, it's earlier than that. I believe he does it after the fourth hour, because the way to time it properly, if I remember this correctly, is that first he has to sell the chametz, so that then you can burn the chametz and do bittul chametz. Because if you do bittul chametz before the rabbi sells the chametz, then so to speak, you are kind of nullify. It's not really a practical difference so much, I don't think, but technically you'd be nullifying the chametz that the rabbi is about to sell, which would be basically mean that's a bad sale, because then anybody could walk in to take your chametz because you've nullified it all, right? So the sequence of events has to be that, again, we stop eating chametz at the end of the fourth hour, right? And then there's this two-hour gap between the sixth hour. By then, no one's doing anything because it's a real Isser Min HaTorah already to eat chametz. But in that gap, and usually the rabbi tells you, like, around what time he's selling the chametz, sells the chametz, then you go burn your chametz, and then you do the bittul chametz. That would be the lechatchila of things. If you are, like, let's say you have to go to work or something like that, that's an interesting question. So what do you do then? Because again, you really shouldn't do the statement of bittul before the rabbi sells the chametz. That's a point that not everybody always realizes. So you should do one of two things. Either burn your chametz and just wait till the later time to say the paragraph of bittul, which you want to make sure you don't forget, right? The other option, which is totally fine too, sometimes people do this if they're going away, is to appoint a shaliach, right? You can ask your neighbor, your friend, or whoever, anyone you trust, to actually burn your chametz for you, right? And this way, you can have the burning, and then you'll know when he's going to burn the chametz, and then you'll do the bittul together, right? So you could do either of those are fine. There's no real difference. There's nothing that says that the statement of the bittul has to be exactly right after you burned the chametz. It's just we do that together, I guess, so we don't forget to do it, right? So, but either of those would be fine. Similarly, by the way, the mitzvah, there's a lot of shlichus going on here, right? There's a lot of making a shaliach, right? We've talked a lot today about the mitzvah of tashbisu, of getting rid of your chametz, right? Not every individual in the family goes necessarily to burn the chametz or does the act of burning the chametz, but it's the family's chametz, so to speak, so therefore the whoever does it is kind of acting as the shaliach. Similarly, there's a mitzvah of bedikas chametz, but not every single family member might get involved in the chametz. I know my wife always said she did enough cleaning before Pesach, so everybody else does the bedikas chametz. She doesn't get too involved, right? She did the real bedikas chametz, so to speak. So there's plenty of shlichus in terms of going on. So just to conclude, I think we finished what I wanted to cover in terms of the chart, which I think is just important to have a good scope of all of the prohibitions on the right side, literally, and then on the left side, the los ases that surround, I'll say surround Pesach, because as we're talking about, some of them are before and after, not just on Pesach. What we'll talk about next week is we'll hone in at the Seder itself specifically, and I don't mean just the nitty-gritty of, this is when you uncover the matzah when you cover it. More, we'll talk specifically about the mitzvos halayla, specifically the dalakoso, matzah, maror, halal, if we have some time, we'll touch upon too. If not, we can always consider that part of the Haggadah shir the next week. So that's the plan. Thank you, everybody, for coming. If you have any questions, happy to take them.